Julianne Malvo Live, which airs on KPFT on Monday mornings at 8 a.m.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
It's 5 p.m. Thursday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. And you're going to find it only here on Houston's community station, listener-sponsored KPFT. I'm Hank Rubicek, producer and tonight's host. And every week, along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their soul. You know, we've had hundreds of memorable storytellers over the past 14 years, but none have garnered the kind of rock star status as the students from Ireland Visual and Performing Arts Middle School. Something happens in the corridors of MVPA. It's called caring. Sure, all our schools have at least some of that in their teaching recipes, but these kids are special. Their teacher, Miss Vinnie Arlt, has inspired them for years. I know because we've had her students on for years. Different students, same teacher, always impressive results. Now I'm looking at 9 of her students right now, and they've got the type of stories that will make your drive time, chill time, or whatever time a great time. Collectively, I would categorize these stories about, self-definition. And for each student, it's about acknowledging someone else as significant to helping reach that positive sense of self. And you're gonna love all these stories. The stories are written, but they're gonna come to life in spoken form. We're gonna start with stories about family. But first of all, I know all of you have heard, don't talk all at the same time, but I'm gonna ask you to. How's everybody doing?
Good.
All right, great, you guys do it. And I want to tell our listeners, this is the second round of this because I screwed up the first recording and you sounded just as good this time as last time. Wonderful. Now, sixth grader Olivia Samet loves art, writing, and hanging out with family. Olivia, you told me that you enjoy any type of writing, but what is it about words themselves that you get down on paper that make you feel so good?
I think it's calming, and if it's not for school, I can do it about just about anything.
It really gives you no restrictions at all. Total freedom. Well, you know, it's hanging out with family that encouraged the story that you're about to tell us. Tell us your story.
My family and I meet up almost every Friday night for dinner. It is always fun and a great way to start my weekend. I get to see 5 of my cousins and get to hang out with them. Other than Friday night, we hang out a lot. Over winter break, we all got COVID and we could only hang out with each other. On Fridays, my grandma always makes something for us delicious for us to enjoy. While we eat, my cousins and I catch up and decide if we want to do anything over the weekend. I'm one of the oldest, and as one of the oldest, we have to take care of some little ones. It is always fun because they just want to play with all the toys at my grandma's house. Sadly, in Hurricane Harvey, my grandparents' house got flooded and we had to stop doing Friday night dinners at their house. We were all sad about this, but luckily about 2 years later, my grandparents' house was rebuilt and it was a new big house, big enough for all of us, and we could continue this amazing tradition of Friday night dinners. Then about a year later, COVID hit, and we couldn't keep doing Friday night dinners. After a couple months of COVID, we could do dinners outside in my grandparents' backyard, but it wasn't the same. For the most part, it was either hot and humid or freezing cold. We did this for about 6 months or so till the vaccines came out, then we can go back to our normal Friday night dinners. On Fridays, we do several things in the 2 hours that we are together. We have a system where each Friday, 8 of the cousins, including my siblings and I, take turns helping with the blessings before the meal. Sometimes before everyone comes, I go early and help my grandma cook and set up for dinner. I mostly did this when my family and I stayed at their house while we renovated ours. After we eat, my cousins and I always have a bit of candy, even if it just had dessert 10 minutes ago. We used to put on a talent show every Friday night for our parents to enjoy. This was how my aunt and uncle told my family that they were going to have a baby. Eventually, we just eased out of doing it. I'm not really sure why, though. I'm so thankful that I can see my family once a week, and I love all the traditions that we do.
Among other things, we know you can't have too much candy. And this is a great story. And it's such a good story. There's got to be storytellers in your family from whom you've learned. Who in your family, Olivia, would you consider to be the storyteller?
I would say my grandpa.
Grandpa. Grandpas are great. I know I'm one, and I'm telling you, we rule. Okay, now what's one thing about telling a good story that you learned from your grandfather?
I learned that it's always best to be creative, whether it's something that is fiction or nonfiction.
Regardless of whether it happened or not, be creative, right? Well, every good storyteller knows the power of amplification, exaggerating a little bit. And he knows his stuff, and he certainly taught you well. Kylie Kerbin is a sixth grader who loves gymnastics and theater. Kylie, two quick questions. Your favorite exercise and favorite play? After all, those are your two favorite things.
I think my favorite exercise in gymnastics would probably be front tucks. And I think my favorite play that I've been in is one, it's a musical called 13 that I got the lead in.
Fabulous. The lead. Now, I don't know what a front tuck is. We're not going to ask you to describe it, but I'm going to assume that everybody out there listens to this show and they're going to do their research. It's got to be a challenging exercise. Now, your story, too, is about family. But you want to focus on how they grew up, which is a great perspective. Tell us your story.
Whenever I was 8 years old, my parents got divorced. I didn't see my father as much as I saw my mom, but this didn't stop my family from continuing to tell our family stories. My grandmother on my mom's side is Czech, and she makes a lot of foods that are rooted from the Czech Republic, like goulash and kolaches. If you do not know, goulash is like a stew with beef, carrots, potatoes, and beans. And I think most of us know what kolaches are. My grandmother's grandparents, or my great-great-grandparents, came from Czechoslovakia to the United States. When my great-great-grandfather Kinsel came to the United States, his name was shortened on Ellis Island. Many European names were actually shortened because Americans thought that they were too difficult to pronounce. After he moved to the U.S., he started a hardware store in Taylor, Texas, which is a small town in central Texas. The building was very large, and it had a small staircase leading to the bedrooms and kitchens for residents. It is now an antique store, and the current owners have even named their store the Kinsel Antique Store to keep with tradition. There's even a sign on the outside of the building from 90 years ago that lights up with the original name on it. My grandmother shared that as a child, her mother and grandmother used to make noodles for soup. They would do so in the odd fashion of taking a clothesline and stretching it across the hallway. They would then cut the dough and hang the noodles to dry on the clothesline like they did back in Czechoslovakia. My grandmother said that someday she would walk out of the room she and her sister shared and they'd find noodles stretched all the way across their house. Now let's talk about my dad's side. My grandfather was in the military and my dad and his family lived in Germany for multiple years. My father also lived all over the U.S. and even in South Korea. My grandfather was also in command in Afghanistan, but my father and uncles had already moved away from home by then. My grandfather ended up being a three-star general in the Army and served for 36 years. My grandfather went to West Point University for college And whenever I asked my father the most shocking thing he experienced while living in another country, he said that whenever he moved to Korea, the tables at restaurants were just like blocks of wood on the ground, and everyone sat around on pillows. He said that he'd seen it in movies, but it always felt overplayed, while this just felt natural and normal to everyone around him. Then I asked my father if there was any country that he ever visited that was different, and his answer was Vietnam. He said seeing all the tunnels and booby traps was so much more than what anyone had ever told you, in school and even by your parents. It felt less humane. My father has lived everywhere, but says Texas is definitely his home. Just because my family has changed, in reality, all of our lives have changed over the last 2 years. That doesn't mean that we should lose touch with what is most important to us.
Now, I thought it was Hungarian goulash. I guess not, right? It is Czechoslovakian, or at least that variation. I think you can tell by my last name that we have something in common, right, Rubicek? That name wasn't shortened. But the other part of my family from Lithuania, their original name was Melamed, and their names changed to Miller. So yeah, the idea of shortening names is extremely, extremely common. Now, talking about heritage is so important. What is the single most important thing, or I should say the proudest thing, Kylie, that you learned about your heritage?
I think probably the proudest and most interesting thing that I've learned about my heritage is just the fact that, 90 years ago, my great-great-grandparents immigrated from Czechoslovakia, and, just 90 years later, I now have, a much better life than they did and an amazing life, and just how everything's changed, in a pretty short time.
And let me tell you how insightful that is. Many people would think 90 years is forever, but the way you said that, you realize 90 years really isn't that long to make those kind of changes. So that's an excellent insight, beautiful insight. Zillian Cage, he taught me how to pronounce her name correctly, is a sixth grader. She loves volleyball and theater, and she's got a story that I think fits in perfectly on the heels of Kylie's narrative. But first, Zillian, you told me that you wanted to be a stage actress. Who's your favorite actress?
My favorite actress is Emma Watson because she's very sarcastic, and that's only one of the many things that we have in common.
Yeah, you tell me how much you love sarcasm. I do too. But you got to be able to convey it well, right? Or else people misinterpret it. Now, you told me that your story is also something about ancestry, and I think it's the kind of story that would even come from ancestry.com. It's the history of your name. We're looking forward to it.
Zillian. Yes, my name is Zillian. I know it's a bit weird that my father named me a number, but once you say it a couple of times, it sounds pretty generic. At first, I didn't know why he named me this, but he is a very creative man and wanted my name to be different, you could say. But when I asked him, he said that he named me this because he thought I would have a lot of prosperity, which I do if I say so myself. Prosperity is having a lot of success, and I have success in lots of things. It's pronounced Zillian, like the number. People always pronounce it as Zylan, Zillin, or even sometimes Zillian. I don't even pronounce my own name right. Usually I say Zillian. Some people also call my name dumb or weird, which hurts my feelings. Even though a lot of people will say it's a joke or it's just a name, it is still particularly important to me and makes me, me. I was almost named Zariah by my mother, which is now my middle name. I would have liked the name Zariah, but Zillian is a rare and cooler name. I love my name a lot for several reasons. The first reason is that it represents a large amount of money. And one day when I become successful, I will have a zillion dollars. Second, it's not an average day-to-day name that you would name your child. It's a name someone creative would put a lot of thought into. Third, it's unique. It has a catchy ring to it when you say it. And last, I have a lot of nicknames. I usually get called Zill, Zilly, Z, ZZ, and sometimes even get called Xylophone by my friends. Almost every time I tell someone my name, they always say, "That's such a pretty name," or "That's an extremely cool name." One of my friends named Isabella, who's here with us right now, said, "That's unique. I've never heard that before." Another one of my friends named Demi said, "It's special, and I like it." I'm incredibly grateful for my name because it represents me as a person, and it's a special part of who I am. I am also grateful for my clever parents for giving me such an extravagant name.
You know, there are a lot of lessons to learn from every story, but this one is really a great topic. You know, I teach storytelling and I tell students all the time, how about talking about where your name comes from? It never really occurs to them that their name comes from somewhere. So with the idea of thinking about messages, what's the takeaway with this one?
From my story, I hope that people take that your name is a very important part of who you are, and all names are special.
They really are. They're all special. And now we're going to go from generic, you know, this family clustering of generic stories, to something a little bit more specific with a story by Tinaj Smith, a seventh grader with a penchant for track and creative writing. I know, Tinaj, that you enjoy prose, but freelance poetry is your favorite genre of creative writing. What is it about poetry in particular that works for you more, or I should say better, than prose?
To me, poetry is a way to express yourself, and you can have a way with words to expose something within the lines, like emotions.
Do you do a lot of rhyming? You know, I know that a poem doesn't have to have rhyming, but do you rhyme, a lot of rhyming? In your poetry?
Free verse poems are, like, they don't have to rhyme.
Okay, so they're a little closer to prose in that respect, I guess, right? They're not as, they don't have to have that rhythm, necessarily. Okay, great. Now, you have a story that is very courageous. You've got a story about your mother, who has an illness that will forever impact your life. And this is really based on an awful lot of introspection on your part. Share it with us.
How my mother's lupus made an impact on my life and hers. My mom was officially diagnosed at the age of 22 in 2004. She didn't tell me until I came of age to understand. When I found out, I knew I had to be there for her even when she didn't ask. A few years later, she needed a new kidney and was put on dialysis. Sometimes she didn't have the energy to be hooked to the machine, so I used to do it for her. Seeing my mom like that, her being tethered to a machine, was devastating. She had the same routine for years, and I always had a fear that she may not wake up after the routine. My mom said she got a call, and the doctors told her they found a match for her kidney. She was waiting on that call for years. All I saw was my mom jumping up and down with a big smile on her face, and she ran as fast as she could to the car. On the way to the hospital, she called almost every person in her support system, and they either drove or flew to Houston. I was so close to crying, and I began to shake and jitter because I was so happy and scared. We ran up the stairs, filled with adrenaline. I was shaking so much that I dropped my phone down two staircases, and all the glass shattered from the phone. We didn't care. We were too focused on how my mom's life could change. I kept hearing voices in my head like, will she still be alive after the surgery? Or will I be able to see her afterwards? I couldn't bear to see my mom on the hospital bed and not conscious. At the time, I had a lot on my shoulders by taking care of my mom. My dad was incarcerated when she was on dialysis, so I needed to learn how to take care of her and have responsibility. I was in third grade and still had to attend school. And when I arrived, my teachers noticed something off about me, and I just broke down crying while hugging them. My emotions were everywhere. Sometimes I had to pretend to be happy. I felt distant, sad, or without ease because knowing that my mom had lupus hurting me. My brother was the most supportive of me for all of this. No one ever asked how I was taking it, so it felt good to feel relief and not feeling pressured. They were very supportive throughout the whole process. My family was there at the hospital, so they called me. I finally saw my mother after about 5 days in person, and she looked amazing. I was so proud of her because I saw what she accomplished and what she went through. In my eyes, she is a strong and courageous woman. Even though she was sore, she was still able to dress me up for my dance and have a smile on her face. The thing that kept her going was, quote unquote, faith, and you were the reason why I could never give up. This year makes 4 years since her transplant, and I'm glad to say she's a lupus survivor.
We're so grateful. All of us are grateful for that. God bless her. That, lot of scary stuff going on, Tinaj, in your story, a lot of scary stuff. And It's a very courageous story, as I was saying earlier. When did you decide to give yourself permission to tell that story in public? And let me just clarify that a little bit. I know that you have no problem telling the story, not at all. But why is it that you really felt that this would be the story that you're going to share with the zillions of people? Can I use zillion? Can I use your name? The zillions of people who are listening to this show, because you know zillions are listening, right? So why would you share that with all of us?
To me, it's a sad story, but it's also a story of courage. And I am very proud of how my mother handled her illness.
Yeah, and we need to learn about courage, don't we? We do need to learn about courage. I think that's something that really many of us don't so much lack, but can't really find. Sixth grader Ella Wolf loves to travel and hang with animals. Now, Ella, I need to know, if you could choose an animal, strange question, but I love asking this question to animal lovers. If you could choose an animal to sit next to you on a long plane ride, I mean long, longer than 12 hours. I mean, you're going to Australia and back. How long is that, right? Like what, a week? Okay, what would that animal be?
I would probably choose my dog because she is very loving when it's time when we have to sleep or we're just all really tired and laying on the couch. She's always just right there with us also doing the same. But she would lick literally everything and me, which would be kind of gross. But at least she wouldn't, like people wouldn't come because if they did, she would probably bark at them.
And what would you talk about?
I don't know if I really talk about anything, but I usually just watch movies on the plane. So I guess I'd watch them with her.
Yeah. You know, I talk to my dog all the time. You know why? He never answers me back. I really like that idea, right? Not answering you back. I mean, when you have a son, when you got grandkids, when you teach for a living, people are answering you back, or at least you think they are. So the idea of talking to someone, something that won't answer you back, to me, is very, very cool. Well, your story shifts to an entirely different emotional place. I think it's an uplifting setting. I know that at one time you told me that you went to your cousin's wedding and that was great, but you're gonna talk to us a little bit more generally about your travel experience, right? And what it means to you. Tell us.
Many people travel when they have breaks from work or their children do not have school. You'll probably travel inside the state you live in or just in your country. That is where my family comes in and is different. We travel very often. Our max is 4 unfamiliar or new places a year, but I have a feeling that might change. Even though we go to new places, we have regular stops to certain states. One is Louisiana, which is where my aunt and uncle live with their cat Sophie and their dog Phoebe. I love to travel, but not as much as my grandparents. Since they are retired, they have a lot of free time. They plan cruises whenever possible or take little road trips around the country. They spark my curiosity about diverse cultures and simply different ways of living. That is why I most enjoy travel when I'm with them. Since the place we are going, they've probably already been, so they know the best spots. Last summer, I went to New York with them. It was so fun because they have a friend in Aurora, New York, with a beautiful house on a lake. We stayed there 2 nights, and it was great. One day, we went to the Corning Museum of Glass. It was amazing. We saw 3 live demonstrations of glass blowing. Then we made some ourselves. New York is one of my favorite states in the U.S. because it's a big city with some rural areas as well. I also love to travel with my parents. I have been to most places alongside them. There are some places I want to go, but they do not want to pay. So they encourage my sister and I to travel when we are older. They want us to expand our culture by visiting new countries, states, and even continents. Traveling is my favorite hobby, but my sister does not agree. She would rather stay in her room with the lights off, listening to music, and doing homework than go and travel extravaganzas. She states that it is too stressful, but I disagree. Even though I have been to a lot of places for my age, my favorite place is England. It is the biggest place I've been to outside of my home country of the United States. I love seeing Big Ben Clock Tower, and even though it was under construction, I also enjoyed seeing Buckingham Palace, seeing the Royal Guards with fluffy hats. I went to a wedding, and we fortunately got to stay in a castle, and I love seeing all the Victorian-style architecture and furniture. It was very pretty. I have also been to Puerto Rico. and I really loved seeing all the wildlife and nature. I went alongside with my parents, sister, and family friends. We stayed in an Airbnb near the ocean. Sadly, that was the time when COVID first hit, so we were stuck in the house for the whole trip. One day, we went to the other side of the island and found a dead starfish on the beach, and we took it home. Not sure why, but we did. It stank the whole time because it was rotting, but we kept it. Later in the trip, we found a coconut and cracked it open. All of us thought it tasted like soap and spit it out. Overall, the trip was great, even those two not-so-great events. This spring break, I went to Paris with my parents, grandparents, and sister. I did Duolingo to help me prepare for the language change, but in the end, it helped me more with words like bonjour or merci. My travel life is pretty hectic, but I'll always love it. Seeing new places and experiencing new cultures is my dream. I've been to 19 out of the 50 states, but my dream is to visit all 50. I also hope to visit all 7 continents one day as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. A lot of stuff in that story. And, you know, a lot of people love to travel, but they're not usually as passionate about it as you are. If there's one thing that you learn from traveling that you can't learn from any other method, what would that be?
If I go to like a new place, it's usually really cool to see how people live, like what their houses look like, compared to us who live in a very different area, like in New York, how they're all penthouse buildings and apartments. Okay. And I think it's cool seeing all the different like food that people eat, especially out of the country.
Right. You think we're spoiled as Americans sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we are sometimes. I know. You know, it's interesting you mentioned London. In my storytelling class just the other day, a student asked, well, you know, how come there's always a castle in a story? I said, well, because most of them were written in London, in England. They said, why? Because England has so many castles. We don't have any here, do we? Anybody ever see a castle in this country? See, there you go, right? Castles are someplace. Beautiful. Very, very good. Well, you know, another reason why I love having this group on the show is because I find that I don't have to work all that hard. For example, I've got a whole bunch of announcements, and this group is going to help me get there. But first of all, Lane, you're up in a few minutes, but I'd like you to please tell the world exactly who we are and who they're listening to.
I'd be happy to. You are listening to host Dr. Hank Rubicek with his special guest, the always magnificent students from Miss Alt's class from MPVA on So What's Your Story? Only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville.
You are hired. I love it. All right, now let's recruit the rest of our post-intermission tellers, Rivers, Sophia, and Bella, to tell us about storytelling opportunities in Houston. Rivers, get us started.
This show is proud sponsors the Houston Storytellers Guild, and it's a terrific place to tell stories and meet the nicest people around. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The next Story Swap is April 26th, so visit their website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for the Zoom link to that swap and all their story swaps, and for information about upcoming events at the Famous Liars Contest held on April 30th. It is virtual, so register on the Guild site. Also, So What's Your Story Facebook page will have all the essential information.
That sounds like a really fun night, Rivers. You know what? Texas has some of the best tellers in the country. Don't take my word for it. Join the Tejas Storytelling Association to take your skills to the next level and become a member of the National Storytelling Network. Members of the NSN aren't only from around the country, but around the world.
The Moth is back at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month, where you'll enjoy a wide range of stories and a focused theme and meet a bunch of Houstonians who love a good story. Also, please visit us on So What's Your Story at facebook.com/SoWhat'sYourStory. Now, back to us.
You guys make us sound so great. It's beyond belief. Beyond belief. Thank you, everybody. Now that the world has heard your captivating voices. Let's get to your stories. Isabella or Beza, Bella, you go by Bella, right? Axel loves ballet and contemporary jazz, but it's ballet that grabbed her heart and won't let go. Bella, what is it about ballet that speaks to you so passionately?
Well, I like how challenging it is. I also like the feeling of success I get when I master a hard step or combination.
Yeah. Have you done ballet? You've done a lot of ballet, I assume. No? A
little bit? Yeah, since I was 3.
Yeah. Well, you know, my wife, as I've told all of you, is a flutist for the Houston Ballet Orchestra. And I didn't know much about ballet at all until she got me into it. And it really is an incredible art. It's a beautiful, beautiful art. I wish you all the best. You're going to be great. Now, your story is about people with special needs. So we're going from a special mom, general family profiles, and now special needs. And this is going to be an incredible story. Tell us about it.
When I was in 4th grade, there was this kid in my class who had anger issues. He didn't have very much control of his emotions, so he would lash out unexpectedly during class. I remember him having to go to the school counselor's office often, and I felt bad because he was missing social time with his friends. I would talk to him sometimes because I wanted him to feel comfortable in the class environment. We ended up becoming friends and played sometimes during recess with some of our other classmates. There is this one piece of equipment that we liked playing on the most. It was called the spider web, which is a big pentagon with rope in the middle to make it look like a spider web. We liked to climb all the way to the top and sit on the highest bars because we thought it was cool. Also, when you were sitting there, you could see the whole playground, which made it a very good spot for talking. One time, when the child and I were on it, the teachers blew the whistle to go inside. I immediately got off with my other friends and ran to meet our teacher. But when I got there, I realized he wasn't with us. We already went inside the classroom and were at our seats when the teacher finally realized that he wasn't there. She asked me to go look for him, and when I went outside, I saw him still sitting on top of the bars. I asked him to come down, and he said he was too scared to move. So I climbed all the way up there and soothed him to come down. He finally got off, and when we got to the classroom, everyone was so happy to know that he was safe. I felt really good knowing that I helped him conquer his fear. Another experience that has happened to me was in 3rd grade. There was this child in our class who had special needs. She was really nice, but had a hard time controlling her emotions. I remember one time we were lining up to go to lunch when all of a sudden she started having a breakdown. At first, she didn't want to get up from her seat. When the teacher tried to coax her to get in line, she freaked out. I hadn't really met anyone like this before, so I was scared. She started knocking things over and at one point kicked down a whole bookcase. The class was freaked out too. The teacher just told us to go inside the building and wait for her there. I didn't know what happened after that, but she ended up being okay. A lot of people are in environments with children or adults with special needs. The least you can do is treat them equally. They are a person, not their disability. A lot of kids have trouble treating people who are different from them as equals. They might snicker when they do something wrong or give them weird looks. That just makes them uncomfortable, like anyone else would be. Another thing that you should do would be to stop using mean words. Something that you shouldn't say is, "What's wrong with you?" Saying something like that is considered rude and insensitive. Also, don't really assume what they can or cannot do. Don't be afraid to ask them how you can help. They know what they need, so they can tell you how to be helpful and respectful. The last important thing that you can do is include them. Maybe pass a ball to them during a game or invite them to sit with you and your friends at lunch. It would probably make them feel happier and more comfortable in the new environment. A similar experience to the first two happened a few months ago when a child with special needs was having a breakdown. It was in the cafeteria, so the whole grade was there. I felt so bad for that poor boy because everyone was staring at him and a few people were filming and laughing. In 4th grade, everyone was accepting and understanding. In that cafeteria, people were not. I was really upset, but I didn't want to do anything because of my fear of getting in trouble. All of a sudden, my friends started to try and stop the kids who were filming. I was surprised because I didn't know that she felt so strongly about the matter. That reminded me of the spiderweb incident in 4th grade. I regret not doing anything the next time something like that happens. I regret not doing anything, and the next time something like that happens, I'm going to do what's right.
Oh, beautiful. Again, you know, as I've asked several of you, there are a lot of lessons in stories. But this one, well, it's a very powerful story for a lot of reasons. It deals with inclusiveness and a number of themes that are very powerful in a very contemporary world. But what's the most powerful lesson, Bella, in this story?
The main message that I wanted to present in the story is to treat people equally, whether you have a disability or you don't.
Right. Sounds simple enough, but hard to do. And I want to throw out a couple of movies that both for all of you and for our listeners. Children of a Lesser God, any of you hear of that? Anybody, you know that play? Children of a Lesser God, it's a must see. It's really pretty magnificent. Kylie, you're nodding, you've heard of it. Charlie, another fabulous movie. Of course, The Miracle Worker is the most common one about Helen Keller, but those are three films that you really need to look into, especially you, Bella, that are marvelous, marvelous statements about people with learning disabilities. Really marvelous. You know, we are going to stay with the same tone with Sophia's story, because Sophia Serena is a sixth grader with a range of interests: reading, swimming, theater, zoology. Well, all of you can see the connections between those, right? Of course not. She's just got all these incredible interests. Now, zoology, Sophia, is kind of the devious one of them all, or deviant, I should say, not devious. What in the world do you like about zoology?
I enjoy zoology because of the facts and things you get to learn about animals and nature and this wonderful planet we live on.
Right. And you think it's a wonderful planet. I mean, you say that very seriously, right?
Yeah, it has its problems, but overall pretty good.
No, that's okay. That's all right. Yeah. I took zoology in college. I did awful. And then they stuck me in botany, and with allergies, all I kept doing was sneezing. So unfortunately, I don't know about either one. But I said that this is similar to Bella's story, because yours is really a lesson about empathy. And for a person who's passionate about animals, this is really kind of a perfect theme. Tell us your story.
During the beginning of May 2021, I noticed one of my fellow fifth grade classmates was not going to recess. Later that week, I went over and asked her why she was staying inside while the others were playing, and she said she was fasting for Ramadan. She told me she couldn't drink water as part of the tradition, so she didn't go outside because she didn't want to get dehydrated in the Texas heat. At first, I was confused because I'd never heard of Ramadan before. Next time I got some free time, I did some research about the tradition and asked my mom about it. Ramadan is a Muslim custom where you fast from sunup to sundown for 30 days. It is meant to celebrate the time in the Muslim religion when the Prophet Muhammad received the initial revelations for the Quran. The Quran is the holy book of God for Islam. The next day, before I went to recess, I mustered up the courage to ask her if she wanted me to stay inside to keep her company. I knew I wouldn't want to be by myself. She said she would enjoy that, and I got permission from our teacher. At first, my teacher was uncertain because she'd be letting two fifth graders be by themselves in an empty classroom. After I explained why I wanted to stay, she agreed, with the condition of her checking in on us often. She told us that she thought we were responsible students and we wouldn't get in trouble. At first, it was kind of awkward talking with her since we were pretty much only acquaintances. The first few days we spent together focused on getting to know one another. After a few recesses, it started getting less and less weird, and we became more comfortable with each other. I look forward more and more to spending recess with her. During one of the recesses, we spotted a blank whiteboard in the corner of the classroom, and we got an idea. Each day, we would look up the national holidays on one of the school computers, and we would list and write things about them on the whiteboard. We had lots of fun every day drawing and writing facts about the national holidays and learning more new things. It was rewarding to our teacher to tell us how the board looked wonderful. We also enjoyed the look of anticipation on our fellow classmates' faces as they glanced over to the board after recess. After the holiday, I felt more immersed in a new culture and continued my friendship. During the whole process, I shared with my family everything I was learning. They supported me and were proud that I was choosing to give up my recesses for a month in order to help a fellow classmate to feel less different and alone. After Ramadan, a different elementary school was hosting a pandemic-style drive-through Ramadan celebration of Eid al-Fitr. Eid al-Fitr marks the end of Ramadan and takes place over 3 days. My parents surprised us by loading in the car so we could attend and celebrate too. The drive-thru was comprised of multiple stops and stations where we could learn about different aspects of Muslim culture. The various stations displayed different regions of the world and where Islam is the dominant religion. At the end of the route, we were given meals of Indian food that I wish I knew the names of, and we also received small gift bags with goodies. The whole experience from researching Ramadan to creating new friends and celebrating Eid al-Fitr was eye-opening for me and my family. Learning about different cultures from such a young age helped broaden my perspective, and I am grateful for this experience and glad to live in a culturally diverse city. By the way, Ramadan will start on Saturday, April 2nd, 2022 at sundown.
Beautiful. You know, what I love about your story in particular is that you really operationalize the word empathy. A lot of people want to be empathetic, but they don't know what it is, and you make it clear exactly what it is. This is a tough question, Sophia, but if there was an ingredient in the recipe for empathy, just one ingredient, the main ingredient, what would that be?
Well, I feel like the main ingredient would be courage, like just so you can have the courage and will to go out there and do something about it and have the drive to do that. So.
Beautiful. Rivers, how you doing, buddy? You're up next. And you're in the sixth grade. In case you didn't know, I'm letting you know right now. And I think that you like to build things, right? You told me you love to build things and you are often inspired by what you see. Now, tell me something. When something catches your eye, you're driving along saying, look at that thing. My God, it's awesome. What is it about that thing that catches your eye?
Well, for something to catch my eye, it has to be shiny or it has to look like it's out of a cartoon or a video game.
Now, your story shifts gears a little bit because you detail your career plans in a pretty innovative way. Tell us your story.
About 5 to 6 months ago, at about 1:35 a.m., I was on YouTube looking for something to keep me entertained, and I stumbled upon a certain video made by Mark Robert. He made the world record domino robot. This video got my creative juices flowing, and that's when I realized that I wanted to build things. At the time, I still didn't have any power tools, and I still don't now, but I did have about 800 popsicle sticks, a hot glue gun, in a mind full of random things I found on YouTube. So at first, all I could make were knives because they were simple and required little to no glue. But later in my rookie engineer career, I could still only make knives, but these were different because they actually had moving parts. It was the middle of a Q-shaped wedge between three popsicle sticks, but it was a start. So the next few months, I mainly made sharp things or just knives because that was the easiest thing to make. But after a fishing trip with my dad, my uncle, I made about 15 different fishing rods from bamboo that me and my friends found near our hangout spot. I didn't have the chance to take it to one of my family's fishing spots, but I did live near a pond. This wasn't really a pond, but it was filled with fish and turtles, so I guess it counts. But the rods I made withstood the force of a snapping turtle that was named Bowser that was at least 20 pounds, so I'd say that I did a pretty good job. At this point in time, it had been about 4.5 months, and I had decided it was time for the biggest project that I've done. I still haven't given this project a name, but what I would build would deal with one of the largest growing problems in my backyard, lizards. There was a freeze that happened in February, and it really got rid of most of the lizards because they're warm-blooded. But after about a week, they were back, and I realized I had gotten my hands on some jumbo popsicle sticks and a half pound of rubber bands. So it was time to get building. I built a few homemade rubber band guns that would shoot a rubber band about 20 feet. My first few tests predicted that my new invention should work outstandingly against the scaly pests in my backyard. So with a walk full of confidence and more rubber bands than anyone should ever need, I headed outside and locked onto my first target. It was a medium-sized lizard, about the size of my index finger, but no less a lizard. So I loaded up a rubber band and aimed at the little thing. My intentions were not to kill it, but to annoy it enough to where it wouldn't come back. But after I let go of the trigger, the rubber band did absolutely nothing but merely disturb it. My first and definitely not final failure It hurt, but not enough for me to stop trying. So I brought my failed invention back to my workspace and got back to work. I tried increasing the draw length, and that seemed to fix my problem. I wanted to test my new modification, but in the process, I realized that I wanted to make something to benefit people other than just me. I went digging around in some old bins filled with random things and found some solar panels from an old kit. The kit gave you the parts to build a solar-powered car, and I took advantage of that. I took the solar panel and motor that the kit came with and tried to make my own version of said solar-powered car. And after a day of trying, I knew that I had once again failed. This failure didn't really affect me because I didn't really plan anything out. That's probably the reason why I failed. I'm still thinking about how I can fix my solar-powered idea and what exactly went wrong. Throughout this short period of time, I've realized that building things is a lot of fun, and I've learned a lot. I don't know what else I would be doing if it didn't involve making things in my garage.
You're a quiet guy, Rivers, and that's a good thing because I don't want people to really hear you say that you make rubber band guns, okay? Did this just occur to me? Do all of you know why people mumble sometimes? Sometimes we think they mumble because they're nervous or they don't know what they're talking about, but that's not true. People mumble because they don't use their mouths. You ever think about that? Notice what happens when I use my mouth. Sounds are clear and distinct. I'm not suggesting I want you to walk around all of your life going, hello, how are you today? But you need to do a little bit more of that because the things that you have to say are really smart and you want to make sure people hear them. Now, Rivers, what's a piece of advice that you would give someone who just says, I don't know what I want to do for a living?
Well, to start things off, thinking about what you want to do for a good chunk of your life is very stressful, and I would think that you should probably follow your heart and take a break because thinking can sometimes be painful, and a lot of people don't realize that.
And when all else fails, you could always make a rubber band gun, right? You got it.
Right.
Lane Samet is a sixth grader and really patient. I appreciate it. Somebody's got to go last, Lane. Thank you. Olivia and Lane have the same last name. Hey, that's a little rhyme. Zillion, write that down. You might want to put it in your next freelance book. But same name, really different styles, and you're going to enjoy this. She is into tennis, writing, historical fiction. Lane, give us an example of a historical character that you created.
One time I wrote a historical fiction about somewhat ancient Mexico with a character named Andrew Mendoza.
Beautiful. Good. Very, very good. Beautiful. Now, your story swings into an entirely different arena, a long time fear. Lane and her phobia, let's call it that. Tell us your story.
Only around 7% to 9% of the population of the world is afraid of dogs. The fear's scientific name is cynophobia. This fear is a fear that people of any age have. However, to have this, being afraid of dogs, it is very hard, especially if you live in a neighborhood with many people. For example, in the state of Texas, there are 7.2 million dogs. That would mean there are around 138,461 dogs per city when divided equally, which is still a lot of dogs. Many people who are afraid of dogs live in areas like this and find it extremely hard to completely avoid their fear, unlike people who have a fear of heights where they can just avoid going up high. Many people are afraid of dogs because of traumatic experiences or they were told cruel stories about them. In my case, I didn't know why I was afraid. My parents couldn't think of a single reason why I would be afraid of dogs. In fact, as a baby, I would watch my cousin's dog run around their house. My first word was their dog's name, being Piper. But around the age of 4 or 5, I was starting to become afraid of dogs. Years later, when I was 9, my parents found this litter of dogs, very small dogs. There were only 6 of them, so we only had a limited amount of time before we could no longer buy one. Of course, my siblings said yes when asked if they wanted a dog, and of course, I was hesitant to say yes. I thought for many days whether I wanted to get this dog or not, but ultimately, I decided to say yes. We waited for months to get this dog. While waiting, COVID-19 hit the world, and we had more important things to focus on, like quarantining and not getting COVID itself. Around the end of July, we finally got to pick our dog. We picked a small boy who had a white spot on his stomach while the rest of his body was brown. And just days later, we had our dog. We named him Max, and he has changed my life. After just around a month, this dog had done more for me than any dog therapist had. I was slowly becoming more and more comfortable being in the presence of dogs. On our drive to get Max, I was terrified about what could happen, like the dog would bite me or he would jump on me. But as soon as Max came out of the car that was driving him to us, he was so tired and calm that I knew everything was going to be okay and that he wasn't going to bite me and that he wasn't going to jump on me. At our house, Max began to become a little bit wild, and slowly but surely, Max became a wild puppy. After that, all those feelings from before cleared my mind, and I was back to being scared. However, as time went on, I became less and less afraid. In fact, every time our front door opens, I go to block it so Max can't run away. I think the thing that helped me the most was the thought that if he ran away now, I wouldn't have a dog in my life and something would be missing. And now today, I am no longer afraid of dogs. In the beginning of my fear, I had rubbed off on my friend, and she became afraid of dogs. However, my friend took the same large step to becoming not afraid of dogs. She got a dog. This dog looks like my dog, except this time black. If you want my opinion on how to overcome your fear of dogs, I would suggest getting a dog and taking one large step to conquer this fear.
I think you caught some listeners off guard when you revealed your fear of our little furry friends. But regardless of what we fear, it's the fear that we fight, right? It's the fear, not what we're afraid of, not the subject. Now, your story is filled with, I think, a lot of great insights. What is the one piece of advice, Lane, that you give someone who's afraid of anything?
The advice that I would give is, if you're afraid of something, don't just avoid it for your life or just a small part of your life. Because even though I've only been around for about a decade, I spent most of it being afraid, and I avoided so many fun things because I was afraid. So if you want my advice, I'd say, face your fears. Don't just avoid them for the rest of your life.
But regardless of what you're afraid of, try to face it to the best of your ability.
Yes.
Right? The only thing you can do. Sound advice, and it makes really good sense. You know, we have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask you a few things that we don't want to forget. For example, let's talk about your teacher, right? That inspirational individual who you see every day. She's very special, and we know why, but I want each one of you to think about one word that best describes your teacher. Give us an image of who she is. If you guys want to come up with the same words, that's okay. But give us a word that best describes her. Zillion, let's start with you.
So the word I said was outstanding.
Outstanding. That speaks for itself. Bella?
I would say she's very passionate about what she does.
Passionate. How do you gauge passion? Like, is she animated or she's just excited? How do you know she's passionate?
I just feel like she goes to great lengths to get us on this radio show and to, like, make our stories the best they could be.
Right. Right. And I think that's really a good thing. Now, she goes the extra mile. Beautifully put. Kylie, your word?
I think creative.
Right. You like that word. You use that a lot. Creativity is a big deal. Your grandpa believes in it. You believe in it. And you want your teacher to do it. And she does. Tanaj?
I think she's intelligent.
Intelligent. I certainly hope so. My God, she's more than intelligent, I think. But that's a good one. Lane?
I would also say that she is passionate.
Passionate, yes. Rivers?
I think she's very straightforward.
Straightforward.
She gets to the point.
She does. Olivia?
Amazing.
Amazing? Well, that's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing just to say that. Ella? A little stuck, frozen. Technology, you got a lot.
I agree with Lane and Bella.
Let's try this. I wanted you guys to slow down. But that is way too slow. But thank you. Write your word in chat. Let me see it. Let me see that word. What's that word? What are you coming up with? Ella, what's your word? Let's see. You got that word for us? Passionate? All right. We got another passionate. If this was a game show, passionate would be the best. You know, like Family Feud, show me passionate. That would be like the number one answer, wouldn't it? Right? Sophia, what's yours?
Mine is idle.
Say that again.
Idle.
Idle. Wow, that is pretty interesting. Why idle?
She gives really good feedback, and like Bella said, she's like very good at what she does.
She is very good at what she does, absolutely. You guys did such a great job today, right? Did you hear about the show before you were on it? You heard about all this stuff, right? You were kind of ready for it or not, or yes? No?
No.
This is all new to
you? I was.
Yeah?
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Well, some of you I know have, you know, I've certainly seen you before, but what a fabulous job that all of you do. And it's always frustrating because whatever you guys are on, it just moves too fast. Thank you, Kylie Durbin, Olivia Samet, Ella Wolf, Isabella Axel, Zillian Cade, Rivers Terry, Lane Samet, Tanaj Smith, and Sophia Serena. With all of you on, that's why we had to rush so much, but I'm glad we got you on. But next time, we're gonna do this again, I hope, and get few of you on so we can do a little bit more. But all of you together demonstrated the essence of human expression and the power of story. All of you really do rock. Now, let's close it up. Olivia, why don't you get us started, if you would, please?
Don't you dare move, because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a cool mix of soul. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day.
Join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story?
Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you.
On behalf of the So What's Your,
you know what? We have a little bit of problem with your voice, with your thing there, so I don't want you to worry about it. I'm going to do that. So on behalf of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't really end happily, we want you to know that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
I think it's so groovy now that people are finally getting together. I think it's wonderful now that people are finally getting together. I think it's so groovy now that people are finally getting together. I think it's wonderful now that people are finally getting together.
Presenting an evening with Amy Goodwin of Democracy Now! Join us Thursday, April 14, 2022 at 7 p.m. for discussions with journalist Amy Goodwin. All proceeds go to KPFT Radio. For more information, go to www.kpft.org. Brought to you by KPFT Radio 90.1 FM, Houston, Texas.
Hey y'all, this is Susan, your host of Border Radio on Houston's community station, KPFT. Join us Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6 for Border Radio, right after Deadbeat. We will feature some of your favorite independent artists and songs from new artists on the rise. We'll spotlight concerts for the week to come, from in-person shows in our area to live stream events you can enjoy right from home. And Border Radio will keep bringing you the great on-air interviews you've come to expect from KPFT. Mark your calendar for Border Radio, Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6 on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, and kpft.org.
You're listening to KPFT.